You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for you in another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And unfortunately, Susie can't join us today. It's been a rough week with the migraines, so just to sit this one out. But everyone, wish her a happy Halloween. And we do have two very special guests joining us. We have the other members of Count Creepyhead.
Hey.
Hi!
I believe Timmy is here. Isn't Timmy here?
Josh.
Hi, Timmy.
Josh, guess what?
What?
I watched a rated R movie. It was scary.
Holy shit, Timmy, I'm so happy for you.
It was scary because it takes place in a hospital, and I'm in hospitals all the time.
And you got to see them titties.
Yeah.
I was so excited. Oh, my goodness, Josh. Josh,
Timmy,
perfect nipple placement.
They were good, right? They were good.
Yeah,
nipples.
Yeah, very symmetrical. Yeah. 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 Okay. Bye, Josh.
Bye, Timmy.
Oh. That little Timmy never disappoints. But we are here to talk about our Halloween special for 2021, which is Halloween 2 from 1981. It's an hour and 32 minutes, directed by Rick Rosenthal, who we would know from Life Goes On, The Witches of Eastwick, Birds 2, Land's End, Law and Order.
You know what? I'm just going to get it out of the way and say, you mean Halloween Poo?
Ba-dum-bum. Although, no, I wouldn't call this Halloween Poo. However, his other Halloween that he directed, which was Halloween Resurrection, I would call that Halloween Poo. That was terrible.
Easily the worst Halloween in the entire franchise.
Trick or treat, motherfucker. it's so bad. It's so bad.
My only memory of that movie is Busta Rhymes telling Michael Myers to go on, get skedaddle. And it works.
Yeah.
And oh, man.
Karate kicks him out a window.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that moment.
Oh, it's, you know, me and Maurice were talking about this the other day after we saw Halloween Kills. I personally feel that Halloween Resurrection is a good idea for a horror film, not for a Halloween movie. Like, the idea of doing, like, an internet spook show where it's like, oh, you know, we're watching all the different cameras and actually having a killer really there, that's a fun idea. But sticking Michael Myers in the mix was dumb as hell, and Busta Rhymes just ruined it. And I love Busta Rhymes, but he just ruined it.
I thought you were going to say watching Katie Sackhoff walk around a house. Because then I'm totally down for that.
I mean, you know. That's a fun internet show. But anywho, let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks. Josh, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Halloween?
Are you sure you want? I got some strong feelings about this one.
Go for it.
So I just finished watching it maybe like an hour ago. And I realized as I was watching it that I probably haven't seen this movie in like a decade. And the last time I saw it, I was probably really, really high, because I remembered it being a lot more fun than it actually was. Maybe it's just that I was watching it with a critical eye this time, or maybe I was not high enough this time. Man, watching this critically was rough for me. there were points that I found point blank boring. I hated how slow Michael Myers moved. It seems like a completely different Michael Myers than the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie Strode, more like on the Flory Strode. Come on, am I right?
Zing.
But Loomis was like visibly intoxicated through the movie. Just so many problems. Also, and this is a long-standing question I've had about the movie, because I know both are said. Is it a clinic or is it a hospital? Because that makes a difference. And if it's a hospital, it's the most fucking desolate hospital I have ever seen in my life.
Thank you.
Things being as insane as they are in Haddonfield.
Yeah, that, and I know Maurice can, not to cut you off, but I know Maurice can attest to this as well. I still work in a hospital. He worked in the same hospital with me. We've both worked nights many, many times. No hospital is that desolate at night. Like, yeah, patients are asleep. There's less staff. Like, if you were to walk around the first floor where I am, you might only see me and a security guard. But the rest of the floors, like the actual patient floors, there is staff.
I was like, the whole time I was just like, fucking come on. I could keep going, but I'm going to save most of it for as we go through it. Otherwise, I'm just going to sit here and essentially rip it apart.
Well, Mike, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts on this one?
You guys are big fans of The Void and you're complaining about desolate hospitals.
Now, hold on. That right there was a small little middle of nowhere. That was like Lockport Memorial. It's like,
also, it's not like there was like a killing spree going on in that town on the night that was happening either.
I am a very rare breed in that I am not a big fan of the original Halloween. I don't hate it.
Oh, wow.
It's just one of those movies, like, it's just not for me. I'm the same way with Scream. I give it a chance all the time, and I'm just bored. Or I'm aggravated by it. I know, I've got some controversial opinions on a few horror movies. And
I can definitely understand about Scream. I enjoy it, but I can see that. But I'm really surprised about Halloween.
Yeah, no, I love them both.
My problem with Halloween, and I always tell this to people, I watched other slasher movies before I got to Halloween, so I had a taste in my mouth of the formula that I wanted it to follow, and I considered Halloween a slasher movie because it becomes a franchise, when it's not. It's like a John Carpenter film that becomes a slasher franchise. So the first Halloween, it's its own animal, but I can't separate it. Having said that, I appreciate part two, because it's more of a proper slasher film to me. And it eliminates Laurie Strode because she doesn't do anything in the first movie other than kind of scream and poke Michael Myers with a coat hanger. So this one, she's just drugged and sleeping most of the time. I like the change in Loomis in that he's not just the hype man. He's not the... who's Mike Tyson's guy with the crazy hair?
Don King.
He's not Michael Myers' Don King, because that's all Loomis does in the first movie is run around and he's evil. He's got the shark's eyes and the devil. Blah, blah, blah. This one, you can tell that he realized he made a mistake with Michael Myers, and it just gets worse and worse for him as the night goes on. So I kind of like that Loomis kind of reaping what he sows in this. And he's sort of a hero, but he's also just getting his punishment because he's just as much to blame for Michael Myers as Michael Myers is to blame for Michael Myers. And then you've just got like all the other dumb slasher movie, like here's a character, here's a simple story. Will they get from point A to point B or will they die? So like, will the last starfighter get in Jamie Lee Curtis's pants? Or is it creepy because she's clearly a teenager? Let's watch to find out. Will Bud have Grace sit on his face? I don't know. Let's watch to find out. Like, will they ever figure out who that other Michael Myers was that got hit by a car and then blown up? I don't know.
They do.
It's Ben Tramer.
Yeah, it's Ben Tramer, but like I just like all those like very quick, we can solve these problems in 5 minutes. Let's follow the characters, then they're gonna throw it in a wood chipper or they run into Michael Myers. So
right.
I like that a little bit. Having said
or they run behind the chainsaws. Exactly. Oh wait, that's a commercial. Never mind.
I still love, or there's still huge plot holes, but it's also, this has a lot more humor than the first one.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't have PJ Souls. I guess that she was kind of the comic relief, whatever. I don't hate it. It's, if I have to watch a Halloween movie, it's usually this. It's 2, 3, or 4 are my go-tos if I have to watch a Halloween. Yeah. It's a thumbs sort of sideways, like at a 45-degree angle for me.
Fair enough. Maurice, what are your thoughts?
Well, I hate this movie. No, I'm just kidding. I actually enjoy part two. I don't like it as much as part one's my, you know, the original's my favorite, much like everyone else's, except for Michael May. But no, I enjoy it. I find myself usually around this time of year. If I watch part one, I will watch part two, like right after it. Just because of the continuation. There are a lot of things that really don't make sense in this movie, but I mean, take it for what it is. You know, I don't like how he walks around. I agree with Josh, how he's just so slow.
Well, isn't he been shot twice and he fell out a window?
Six times. I shot him six times.
Yep.
Six times.
I shot him in the heart.
He's not a man.
Oh, Loomis. I love Loomis.
Listen, he's not a man. He's a monster. And I need to tell you that he's evil. He's evil. I've looked into his eyes and I've seen the blackness and I carry a gun because he's evil. And get the fuck away from him, Lonnie.
I can't stand Bud. I mean, he's supposed to be the comic relief. I just wanted to jump through the screen and rip his head off.
Yeah, he's an ass.
Okay, who smokes a joint in the break room? Did this really happen in the 80s?
I mean,
in 80s, a hospital.
In 80s horror movies, yes.
It definitely didn't happen in a hospital, but I definitely worked a job once where we would regularly smoke pot in the cooler and blow it out the exhaust fan. Only to one day have the kindly old gentleman from the shop next door, when the fan was broken, very casually quip, see, you boys are having trouble with your reefer fan. And we were all just like, oh, we probably shouldn't do that anymore.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, if you're going by proper slasher rules, you're supposed to pass judgment on these characters. So yes, he had to be smoking reefer in the break room because you're supposed to say bad person, and then Michael Myers is going to come down like the hand of God.
Well, he's rapey, so that should be the top reason right there.
Yep. Well, yeah, but you know, simpler times, he was just that lovable old pervert.
Oh, I don't know about lovable.
That's still a check mark against you in a slasher movie. And it's going to get you killed.
Although, yeah. look at how clever they were. He's sitting there smoking pot, and his name is Bud. Ha 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 ha.
Very, very clever.
Oh, that's amazing writing right there.
Yeah. Oh, almost as amazing as this poem.
But Mike.
Mike?
Yeah, to me.
Mike? Mike!
What's up, Timmy?
Mike! What about you? What about Mike?
What about my thoughts?
What's your valuable opinion on this early 80s horror classic where there's a skull inside the pumpkin.
Oh my God, there is.
I'm glad you asked, Timmy. I'm actually the 80s.
The opening has to have an explosion.
I can't lie, that opening used to creep me the hell out. Just the zoom in on the pumpkin, having it rip apart and show a skull, that used to actually scare me as a kid. Still kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies now. It's like that nostalgia creep out. But no, I'm a fan. I definitely enjoy this one. Usually if I watch a Halloween movie, it's going to be one followed by this, or Halloween 3. I kind of went out of order this year because I got a bug up my ass about Halloween 4. I couldn't remember if certain parts were in that or in 5. So I'm like, let me just watch them. And, you know, I watched part 4 and 5 back to back. But, I mean, overall, I enjoy the entire franchise, including Halloween 6. And like I said, there are moments of Resurrection that I have fun with. It's a terrible movie, but I still have fun with it. But this is one of the better ones to me. It's there's a handful of horror films that I always have to watch, like, back-to-back movies of, where I will do, like, okay, Hellraiser. If I watch part one, I always have to watch part two.
Yeah.
And very similar with this. If I watch part one, I want to watch part two. And it's just because they are direct continuations. So I definitely like it. It is not without its flaws. You guys are all correct in saying Dick Warlock does not do a great job as the Shape. He kind of meanders around like a dime store Frankenstein, and it's painful to watch in some parts. That it's funny, too, because I guess Deborah Hill was very disappointed with his movements as Michael Myers. And Dick Warlock has gone on record as complaining about that, saying that she never said anything during the filming and how dare she after the fact. So, yeah, he was a little salty about that one.
Well, maybe he'd be less salty if he didn't suck.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean,
you hear that, Dick? You suck.
Oh,
Josh, Dicks can't hear.
From my understanding, this one can.
Yeah, he's only missing his eyes. I mean, you know, he can still hear.
We'll get to that.
But he is a warlock, so I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dick. Don't use your warlock powers on me.
He uses dick magic.
Oh Lord. Dick magic. Good God.
Dick magic.
I don't know why I just have Oingo Boingo's weird science in my head, but now it's dick magic.
In my hands and in my hand, why can't people understand my masturbation? Dick.
Oh man, yeah. Now my dick
isn't real. All right. Sorry.
Wow. Yeah, now whenever I hear that, I'm going to think of Dick Magic.
I do not know.
Dick Magic!
From my heart and from my hands, why don't people understand?
All right. Masturbation.
Masturbation.
Oh, Lordy. So, we'll get into the cast real quick. Obviously, Laurie Strode, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, once again. We really don't need to go through her credits, as we've gone through it many, many times. But she's in a bunch of movies we'll talk about on this show. We have Sam Loomis.
More royalty.
Exactly. Played by Donald Pleasance. Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, The Fugitive, You Can Only Live Twice, THX 1138. Escape to Witch Mountain, The Monster Club, Halloween, Halloween 4, Halloween 5, Halloween 6.
And Escape the bottom to of the wine bottle.
That too. Then we have Leigh Brackett, played by Charles Cyphers, Assault on Precinct 13, $6 Million Man, Bionic Woman, Wonder Woman, Halloween 1, and Halloween Kills most recently. But he is our Murder, She Wrote connection.
Ah!
Then we have the Shape, also Patrolman number 3, played by Dick Warlock. We would know him from Blazing Saddles, Kolchak the Night Stalker, Halloween 3, Pumpkinhead, The Abyss, The Rocketeer, Spider-Man, and Camp Massacre.
He's you a call bad him warlock.
Dick Wizard.
Dick Wizard.
He's a bad warlock. Bad.
Then we have Officer Gary Hunt, played by Hunter Von Leer. We would know him from Night Gallery, Kolchak the Night Stalker, The Dukes of Hazzard, History of the World Part 1, Magnum P.I., Trancers 3, one of my favorites, and The West Wing. Then we have Jimmy, played by Lance Guest. We would know him from The Last Starfighter, Jaws the Revenge, St. Elsewhere, Knott's Landing, The Wonder Years, and The X-Files. Karen, played by Pamela Susan Shoup, Night Gallery, Wonder Woman, Empire of the Ants, The Incredible Hulk, Buck Rogers, Knight Rider, and, oh, she's also in Murder, She Wrote. I forgot about that. Then we have Bud, played by Leo Rossi, Amazing Stories, Maniac Cop 1 and 2, Analyze This, and ER. Then Miss Elves, played by Gloria Gifford, 48 Hours, This is Spinal Tap, ER, and 12 Monkeys. A lot of other people in this, but they were just like walk on the screen once and, you know, walk away. So not mentioned.
It's a pretty sparse cast, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then for sparse, anyone
tiny and crappy and
for anyone who hasn't seen this, it says while Dr. Loomis hunts for Michael Myers, a traumatized Laurie is rushed to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital and the shape is not far behind. So it picks up right where part one leaves off. Laurie's taken to a hospital. Loomis is hunting around Haddonfield trying to shoot Michael Myers another 6 times. And Michael is off looking for Laurie.
And guys, I'd just like to chime in for a minute here. Bruce Myers, I was the original Michael Myers. I like to stalk the girl around Haddonfield on Halloween night. And I just wanted to say that the man in this movie is... He's not me. He's just not me. I stalk with the precision of a shark, as I am part shark. And I also have no relation to Laurie Strode. No, that's that file is wrong. That's, in fact, Michael Myers with some sort of independent channel in the middle of Peoria. He's apparently got a relation to her, but they've mixed it up, so they tried to blame it on me. But again, this was not me. This was I don't know, may have been one of my cousins having a play. But no, I was swimming around doing shark killer stuff. Carry on. Just needed to voice that and let you know that I move more precisely, and especially if I'm looking to have a little nibble.
Shark killer stuff. Oh, loada loada. We open up with Mr. Sandman playing on a black screen that says Haddonfield, Illinois, October 31st, 1978. Now,
that's racist.
Well, this dude, Rick, was it Rosenthal? He's only directed this and Halloween. He did Halloween Resurrection, but he had his influence in Halloween H2O because they opened that one with the same song. So Mr. Sandman opens and closes this one and H2O, which is just an odd thing. But we then get a recap of the events of Halloween. So the like last scene. Laurie sends the kids to the McKenzies, you know, the same place that Drew Barrymore's parents went to in Scream. You know, then she fights Michael. Loomis shoots him 6 times. He falls out of the window. Loomis runs outside, sees that Michael is gone. And I love this part because a neighbor runs outside asking what the hell is going on. And cryptic Loomis has to be cryptic. And he yells, "Call the sheriff. Tell him I shot him." The neighbor's like, "Who?" He goes, "Tell him he's still on the loose." He goes, "Is this some kind of joke? I've been trick-or-treated to death tonight." He goes, "You don't know what death is." And then we cue the music, and Loomis runs off into the night. And I just wrote, "To the Loomis Mobile." Dun-da-da.
He's so subtle.
I'm going to go and find another bottle of wine, because it combats the evil.
Oh, man. So then we get the opening credit crawl where we slowly zoom in on the jack-o'-lantern and it splits open and reveals the skull inside like we were talking about earlier. We zoom in on the skeleton's eye, and this is a nice transition. We cut to a POV shot of Michael walking through the back alleys of Haddonfield. He sees Loomis yelling at Sheriff Brackett about how he shot him 6 times. He shot him in the heart. He's so out of his mind in this opening. And Brackett tells him he couldn't have gotten far, so they jump in Brackett's police cruiser and they take off. Michael watches them go. He continues to walk around the neighborhood and peeks into an old woman's window who's making some sandwiches. So her husband's passed out watching Night of the Living Dead. She goes to check on him to see if he wants mustard. And we cut to a special news bulletin about the murders in Haddonfield. Now, while she's watching this, Michael just kind of sneaks into her kitchen and takes her knife and walks away.
You know what's crazy about this? Night of the Living Dead is only 12 years old at this point, and it's already got that, like, it's got to have a cameo in every movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it started, but it's just like, we're going to reference stuff. Let's have Night of the Living Dead on the background.
Well, it's because it went public domain almost instantly.
I know, but it already seems, like, dated, and it's only 12 years old at this point.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah. But it's just like, I think that's the main reason is they were like, oh, you know, Romero don't have the rights anymore. Let's just fuck him over repeatedly. So,
hey, just remember when kids turn 12 years old, you can just be like, you're as dated as Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah. And if they try to OK Boomer you, just be like, just watch Halloween 2 from 1981.
That'll show you.
Get off my lawn.
I love this. She goes back to her sandwiches and finds blood on the cutting board, but no knife, so she screams. Now, Michael just calmly walks through the yard, like, kind of looking back over his shoulder, like, oh, she's not catching me. She's not following me. He goes and hides in the shadows.
And I do have to point out briefly that, like, that's the most realistic blood in the entire movie.
True. Very true.
Like, every other blood is basically just red paint. Mm-hmm. Like thick red paint, but then for some reason that blood is just like maybe sandwich topping.
It was a little strawberry jam. It somehow looked more real than well, we'll get to her blood, but Miss Elves.
And it's overanalyzing, but do you think it's safe to assume Michael Myers is kind of a mentally and emotionally stunted, kind of stuck at like 10 years old, other than the fact he knows how to drive?
I mean, I would think so.
Well,
yeah.
I think they say in 6, don't they say in 6? I mean, the new one that he's got the mind of a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Because he was 6 when he snapped. Okay.
In the modern films, yeah, he has the mind of a 6-year-old.
But I think even back to this, I'm sure he has the mentality of a 6-year-old. I don't think that's ever really changed.
Yeah.
See, now I have a very important question.
Okay.
And it could be because I haven't seen the rest of the movies in a while. Mainly because I usually just watch like the first one and the third one.
Mm-hmm.
But is there another instance of Michael Myers like casually walking by so many people and not killing them?
Actually, yeah. Yeah, there's a couple examples of that. I mean, it happens a lot in part one. But yeah, and I want to say in part 4, there's more than a few times where he walks past people. Like there's and definitely in part 5 where he goes to the gas station with the girl.
Okay.
And he's got the other mask on. Yeah, like he seems to pick and choose who he kills in the original timeline. And then in the modern timeline, like we discussed before, they basically followed your advice, Josh, and turned him into a shark. He kills anything in his path.
I mean, I guess I accepted and understood that he was walking through town without killing anyone because, yeah, he has done that before.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he went into the house and was just like, bye.
Yeah, and I don't want to ruin anything for Mike, but I will say this whole opening is kind of homaged in Halloween Kills, and it's...
Well, I hope he steals the sandwich in Halloween Kills.
I'm not going to say nothing.
Pin the knife on the donkey.
Exactly. So he goes walking through the neighborhood, and I love this though, because when the woman is screaming, we hear this neighbor girl screaming. I forget what the last name was, but she's like, "Are you okay?" And she comes running outside. And Michael just kind of ducks in the shadows, like, "Oop, can't see me. If I don't move, you can't see me."
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I absolutely love the phone call she makes.
Well, yeah, because she goes back inside. And she picks up the phone. She was apparently already on the phone mid-conversation. And she goes, she's talking about how her neighbor was screaming, but they're not answering now. And she goes, "Yeah, she's always picking on her husband. He probably decided to start beating her." And I'm like, wait, what? She, like, just so casually mentions that she thinks her neighbor is getting the shit kicked out of her.
And, I guess this is this movie's answer to Let's Go Sleep with the Little Girl.
Yeah, the first one.
No, it's rip-off her clothes.
Yes. Well, the first one casually.
Well, what are they going to do after that?
I don't even want to think about it.
Yep. Makes you wonder what the hell's going through Carpenter's mind.
It's just the implication.
I will never forget getting the text from you, because you were like, wait, has this always been here? I lost my mind laughing when you got to that part.
I don't know how I missed that for so many years.
But yeah, so she's talking on the phone, you know, about the wife beating happening next door. And she tells her friend how she's home alone, that her parents are out of town. And the friend asks her if she's heard about the murders that happened in Haddonfield. She tells her to turn on the radio. So she turns it on, finds out that it happened just a few blocks from where she is. Kind of freaked out. We see Michael watching her through the window, and he just kind of goes over to the front door and lets himself in and leaves the door wide open. The girl hears the sirens coming, tells her friend that, you know, "I can hear the sirens. They must be close by." And the friend, just to fuck with her some more, she's like, "They say the guy got away." And she's like, "Oh my God, do they know who it was?" And just at that point, you hear a noise in the next room. She drops the phone, goes in the living room. She's like, "Hello, who's there? Who is it?" Door's wide open. Like, if I turned around and saw my door is wide open, I hear police sirens, and I know there's a killer on the loose, I'm booking it out the back door. I'm just gone. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you investigate? But I love the way she gets killed, because Michael just jumps out. Like, he looks like a little monkey. He jumps out, like, from behind the couch, like, "Ha-ha!" and just grabs her and kills her. It's like, all right, that's the most active he is in the entire movie. But we cut to the cops and paramedics on the scene at the Strode house. We see the paramedics getting Lori on a gurney and taking her into the ambulance. Lori begs them not to put her to sleep. The paramedics, Jimmy and Bud, talk about how they know who she is, that she's the daughter of that Strode Realty guy. And we find out here that Jimmy's younger brother, Ziggy, goes to school with her. Ziggy, what a name. So we cut to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital, where we see a woman arriving with a kid who has a razor blade stuck in his mouth. That effect used to scare the shit out of me as a kid, even though I know by now, like, it's all bullshit. But as a kid, you know, you heard all the stories about the razor blades and candy bars and all that. That just freaked me out so bad.
That's why you should stick with applesauce.
Of course. Give just handfuls of gravy and applesauce. There you go. But apparently having a razor jammed into your talkie hole isn't enough of an emergency, because the nurse at the front desk just gives him a form and is like, "Go have a seat." And we see Jimmy and Bud bring Lori in, and we find out that the doctor was at the country club and is pretty drunk. I was like, what the fuck?
What an asshole of a doctor.
I love it. He comes out, his lab coat's half on, he's burping, he's like, give me some more coffee. He goes,
doctor ever. He is competing with Dr. Loomis here. So, like, that says a lot, but he's still the worst doctor ever.
This is true. For different reasons, but this is true. But he goes to check on Lori, finds out, you know, she's been stabbed and she's going to need some stitches. She begs him to not put her to sleep, but they put her to sleep anyway. So, womp womp.
So now, take that, you crazy broad.
Yeah, the last movie we covered, you know, he wanted to drug the lady, but, you know, you want I should roofie you? So now we cut to Loomis and Brackett driving around looking for Michael. Brackett is annoyed with Loomis, but, you know, he's determined to find him. So Brackett repeatedly accuses Loomis of letting Michael out, but Loomis calmly repeats that he didn't. Brackett's
calmly, he's drunkenly repeating he didn't. I didn't let the Michael Myers out. I didn't let the evil out. He's evil and he got out because he's evil, and I'm not drunk right now. I have a gun for protection.
Well, I love it because Brackett goes, there's no way you shot him 6 times. No man could have survived that. And he calmly loads his gun and goes, he's no man. He's a shark. A shark man. Oh, wait, no, that's how I read it. He goes, he is no man. And then Loomis notices something out the window and yells at Brackett to stop the car. We pan over and see a bunch of kids trick-or-treating and what appears to be Michael Myers wandering down the street. Brackett asks Loomis if it's him, and he clearly says, I don't know. Yet he runs out and aims his gun at this kid anyway. Like, he's ready to gun down this child. Oh my god, I laugh so hard every time that scene happens.
Okay, so
the next scene had me laughing.
Loomis is a doctor willing to pull a gun on a kid. This maniac was responsible for Michael Myers for like, what, 20 years or something?
Yep.
So can you imagine drunken Donald Pleasance screaming at a 6-year-old, you're evil! You're a shark to the devil! Of course Michael Myers is the way he is.
You've got the blackest eyes, no soul, child.
Like, clearly, he did something wrong, but he probably needed, like, serious mental health and intervention, and instead they gave him Dr. Loomis.
Well, now, if we follow the logic of part 4, 5, and 6, they knew exactly what they were doing because the Thorn cult was running Haddonfield or running Smith's Grove Institution. So, you know, they put Loomis in charge of him to make him go crazy to kill people.
Right.
So it all makes sense.
Movie's got a movie.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Brackett fights with Loomis, grabbing his gun while he's screaming about Michael. Now, we see that this guy distinctly has blonde hair on the Michael Myers mask, so it's definitely not him. He tries to wander away, like, looking back over his shoulder, like, crazy motherfucker's gonna shoot me. And then he's hit by a car going in fast forward. Like, again, that cracks me up, because it's clearly sped up footage. He gets hit by a car and then slams into a truck that is clearly filled with dynamite because it explodes into a giant fireball at impact.
Oh, and it's so clearly a dummy.
Yeah. And I love how the dummy falls over on the hood of the car, but then when they look at it, it's standing back up.
Oh, I will say the dumbing Bernie looked... Let me try that again. The burning dummy looked great.
It did. But the cop flops out of the car unscathed, and he's like, oh, I came out of nowhere. And then Brackett's yelling at Loomis, asking if it's him, but Loomis can't be sure. Gary shows up, Officer Gary, and tells Brackett that they found 3 more bodies across the street from the Doyle house, and that one of them was his daughter, Annie. So Brackett freaks out, they all pile into the cruiser and take off. Cut to the hospital, where we see some staff watching a news report about the murders. This is where Bud's smoking a joint in the break room. And Jimmy makes his way off to Lori's room to see how she's doing. It just reminded me of that Seinfeld episode with the guy who speaks in third person. Like, Jimmy likes you. Like, that's all I can think about.
Oh.
So Nurse Elves comes in, tells Lori that she cracked a bone and had to put a cast on her. And she's all stitched up now, but it's going to be, you know, she's going to be sore for a bit. So Jimmy tells her, or she tells Jimmy, she tells Jimmy he has to leave because visiting hours are over. So Jimmy feigns like he's following her and then tries to stay behind to ask if she wants a Coke. And Bud comes in and's like, we got another call. We got to go. And he's like, oh, forget about that Coke. I'll get you one later. Jimmy's just weird. So we cut back to the news reporters outside of the Doyle house. Couldn't remember the name of it. So we cut to the news reporters outside the Doyle house. The paramedics are taking bodies out. The cops arrive. Brackett looks under the sheet and sees his dead daughter. He closes her eyes and looks in complete shock. He stammers about how he has to tell his wife before anyone else does. And Gary tells him to just go home and they'll take care of everything. Brackett then turns his attention and anger toward Loomis, damning him for letting Michael loose. Once again, Loomis calmly tries to explain he didn't let him out. He gave strict orders for him to be restrained. But, you know, it's Loomis, so no one
blames him. Oh, that Loomis.
Crazy, crazy Loomis. But Loomis tells the other cop that if it wasn't Michael Myers burning up in that accident, then a lot of other kids are going to be slaughtered tonight. And now we have this back and forth where the cop tells him, he's like, he's dead, I saw him. He goes, you saw a man in a mask. He goes, it was him. Says, I want to believe you, but I have to be sure. I can't stop until I'm certain he's dead. Loomis gives his spiel about how, you know, inhumane Michael is, and there's a real possibility that he's still out there. The shark is on the loose, etc. He asks Gary where they took the body, and he tells him the coroner's office. He tells him, have a dentist meet me there in a half an hour. So we cut to elsewhere in Haddonfield, where we see a boombox cowboy walking around listening to the news. As you do on a boombox.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't do that? I liked
Walter Cronkite that much back then.
Every time I watch this movie, I laugh at the boombox cowboy. Oh, man. So we see two women leaving a Halloween party. One of them is complaining up a storm on how lame it was and basically just wants to abandon her friend there because she's going to be late for work. Her friend reminds her that she promised her a ride home. She sighs heavily and agrees. I was like, she sucks. That is the worst kind of friend. Like, no, just stay at the party. I gotta leave. You're on your own.
Like, but you promised.
It's like, I know I did. Like, you suck. But they get in their car and take off. They pass by Michael, who watches them go. Then he bumps into the boombox cowboy. Just as the news happens to be commenting that Laurie Strode survived and was taken to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital. And then Michael's like, I have work to do to the Myers-mobile. Dun, dun, dun. And he takes off to Memorial Hospital. And I love it because there's a sign, like a big sign that just says to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital. Like right there on the corner. And Michael's like, this way. And just takes off. Oh, it's so dumb when you start watching it critically.
Oh, man. I I could only sigh. It was very frustrating to watch some of these things critically. It was like, but no, this doesn't fit with Michael.
Exactly. So now we cut to the hospital where we see party nurse arriving late and we see Michael in her rear view. And I'm like, damn, he moves fast as fuck. Like, he's slow everywhere else. He beat a car there. Like, I know she said it's 5 minutes to your house and then another 5 minutes back to the hospital. But it's like, so 10 minutes of driving time and he was able to walk there that fast? Like, damn, he good.
Oh, I like even more that it was like a 10-minute total drive, and she was complaining about it. She's like, oh my god, you want me to drive 10 minutes?
Yep. Oh, so inside we see Jimmy, Bud, and another one of the nurses still watching the news report, and Bud's complaining about how he wants pizza. He just kind of... Go ahead.
As he sits and smokes his pot in the hospital.
Hey, but it was... I want pizza too, Bud.
But it was an odd moment. This is one of those, like, I like cheese moments.
Where with his roach clip.
Yeah, his little medical scissors that was his roach clip. Here's the thing I don't get. Like, why was this scene here? It was literally just him going, I want a big pizza with sausage and peppers, but no mushrooms. I hate mushrooms.
I think it was supposed to be a comedic scene.
But he's just placing an order with dominoes. Like, it does. It's like, this doesn't make sense. But anyway, so now we cut to Paul Blart Mall Cop watching security monitors as Michael just saunters by.
Like, oh, worst cop ever.
He's literally staring at the monitors, and one of the monitors, we see Michael just like, just kind of walk through the scene. Completely unnoticed. Party nurse knocks on the door to be let in. He buzzes her in. Now, we cut to another door closing elsewhere, implying that Michael also got in. And we know in a minute that he did get in the hospital. But I'm like, wait, I need to understand this. So when Paul Blart unlocks the one door, he's not just unlocking the door he's watching. He's unlocking every door on the campus?
Yes.
I'm like, none of this adds up. This makes no sense.
Well, you see, Michael has telekinesis as well.
So he's a telekinetic shark.
Did you guys hear the cartoon tiny piano sounds when he was tiptoeing around and sneaking in all the doors? That's all he needs.
Yep. It was the Scooby-Doo sound effects. Oh, God. So we cut back to the paramedics and the nurse talking. And the nurse claims her friend saw Michael Myers walking around the other day, and it was so creepy. Bud calls her out, saying her friend is full of shit since he didn't escape until last night. And she goes, you don't have to swear, Bud. Every other word with you is either hell or shit or damn. He's like, I'm sorry. I guess I just fuck up all the time. She gets up and leaves. Like, I'll give him that. That was actually funny. But party nurse, who we find out is Karen, comes in and flirts with Bud. She tells him that she'll see him around later and heads up to the floor. And now this is where we get the little ditty from Bud, which, again, doesn't make any sense because her name is Karen, not Grace. But does anybody else want to sing this?
Oh, I want you to.
Oh, I'm not singing. I'm just going to read it. There we go.
I think I know somebody wants to sing it.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let me bring up the lyrics.
Amazing Grace, why won't you sit on my face? Line?
Don't make me cry.
Don't make me cry.
I just need your pie.
Guys? Wow, that was beautiful, Timmy. Guys?
Yeah, Timmy.
Wait, Maurice?
Hi, yeah, Timmy.
Yeah. Maurice? Yo. So, what kind of pie? I don't get it. Is it like apple pie? Is it like pumpkin pie? Is it like hairy 80s vagina pie?
It's, as The Rock would say, poontang pie.
Poontang pie. Can I get that at, like, Denny's?
Probably.
All right, I'm gonna order it from Grubhub. You guys, carry on.
Grubhub poontang pie.
That child kind of looks like a bucket of chum.
I had to mute. That put me into a coughing fit.
Makes me kind of hungry. Well, it looks like a bucket of chum. Feel like I could just put him in my mouth and chew. Looks like he might be the same consistency of some of that bubble gum.
Oh, he makes a cameo later in the movie.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to give him a chew. Okay. All right, I'll see you guys later. I'm going to go chew the boy.
Bye, Bruce.
You're going to put me in your mouth? Oh, boy, it's going to be fantastic to me. Yes!
Oh, God. I don't think it's the kind of putting him in your mouth that you're expecting, Timmy.
Oh, man! I'm hoping my saliva maybe is going to rehydrate him a little bit and bring some of the flavor back, but hopefully it won't make him grow any extra limbs because I got magic spit. On account of being a shark man killer thing.
Can sharks blow bubbles?
Oh, you better believe it. I'm going to focus on the blow part.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm going to call you Bubbles.
Okay.
Oh my god. Oh. I knew this was a good idea.
Why can I suddenly picture like Bruce Myers like shark in a Michael Myers mask with like almost like King Shark with like a Michael Myers mask just like carrying a boy in a bucket.
I like that he has the New Zealand voice. That is awesome.
I don't know why he does. It was just like,
yeah, he's a New Zealand shark. likes to put on that Halloween mask, pair of overalls, and walk around town, scare the kids.
I'm picturing what's Murray.
Yeah, it is absolutely influenced by Murray.
I'm trying to, Murray from
Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, okay.
Hi, what are you on your way to a dick meeting?
Oh, Lord. So after that little ditty, Jimmy gets annoyed telling him to shut up that it could have been Ziggy or Bud's little brother that they pulled out of there. He's clearly freaked out by the murders. Bud tells him that he thinks that it's just because, Jimmy wants to get with Lori. And then he goes, rule number one, never get involved with a patient. Nurses? Now that's another story. Jimmy gets pissed off and leaves. He wanders down the hall and passes the door, which is creaking shut. Clearly, Michael just went in that door. And we go inside the door and we see a POV shot of Michael. Oh, and we hear Vincent.
Oh, wow. I'm impressed. I didn't even hear him, but he, like, walked into the room as you said that, so
I was like, either that's Vincent or Dr. Mew, I'm not sure which one.
Well, we could make the argument that that's Dick Wizard, and whereas Michael Myers was a shark in Halloween 1, he's one of Josh's cats in Halloween 2.
Well, you say he's a wizard, so he's now in the form of a cat, so yeah, I'll just keep him as my pet because he did such a terrible job portraying me.
There you go. but we see the POV shot of Michael walking through the dark stairwell and then through the hall in the nursery, where we see Karen walk by and he hides in the shadows. Like, he doesn't take her out. He's like, oh, I gotta hide. And we cut to Nurse Elves giving her shit for being late. And Michael just kind of sneaks by in the background, like, again, with that cartoony doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, just runs by. And now we cut to Jimmy talking to Lori, complaining about how Michael Myers was handled. He should have been watched better. This is where Lori finds out who was after her and looks completely shocked, wanting to know why Michael would want to kill her. Because she's like, from the Myers house?
Like, Jimmy is such a little, like, the bitch. Worst kind of, like...
It's a little bitch.
Little bitch. He's just, like, he's faking his concern for Lori because he wants to get in her pants.
Oh, yeah. It's total nice guy syndrome.
It's got like that white knight problem.
Jimmy,
hey,
sucks.
Hey, pretty drugged girl in a hospital bed. You want me to get you a Coke? It's a real shame about that Myers guy. I hear he might be in the hospital. Better let me put my fingers in you.
Pretty much.
Well, that took a turn.
I've got the highest score on Last Starfighter. So I guess we're a couple now.
See, whereas Bud is the grossest of the characters, just for, you know, existing in the way that he does.
At least he's straightforward.
I'm going to say that Jimmy is the most useless.
Agreed.
Yes.
We'll get to just how useless he is later, folks. And trust me, it's useless.
It's pretty damn useless. So Nurse Elves comes in and busts Jimmy, telling him to get the hell out. So
I'm sorry, every time I know it's her name. Every time they said it in the movie and every time you say it, I just picture two elves stacked up in a nurse's costume.
Oh, God. That's awesome.
Nurse elves.
Yes, we're absolutely a nurse.
We're not two elves stacked up in a lab coat.
And don't be late again.
So she tells Lori that they're still trying to get a hold of her parents, that they were at the same party that the drunk doctor was at, but they already left and they can't find him right now. So
they
did. Yeah, exactly. Now, this is where she picks up the phone and tries to call once again, and she finds that the phone is dead. So she tells another nurse, I think it was Janet, she goes, tell the security guard we're having trouble with the phones. And she just goes, oh, he's at the other end of the hall. I'm like, you lazy fuck. Like, just walk down the hall. Jesus.
All the way down the hall in that huge building.
Exactly. So Lori gets nervous and she asks what's going on with the phones. Nurse Elves tells her that not to worry, just to get some rest. She walks out of the room, and then Lori does what you do in every horror film when you find out the phone is out. Pick it up, tap the receiver, and listen, like, oh, by golly, it is out. Because you have to check.
Oh, man, it is out. I hear nothing. Oh, God!
Look, no, Mike, most of your listeners are so young, they don't even know what those kinds of telephones are.
Oh God, that is sad when you have to explain the rotary phone. And I've already had to explain that to my son a couple of times.
None of them have had to spin the wheel to dial a telephone. So
this is true. So now we cut to Janet and Paul Blart talking. He hands her a walkie-talkie and tells her he's going to go check the phone pole. He asks her to wait there and he'll call her and let her know what's going on. She flips out whining that she has to get back to the floor, and all I could hear was, but I was going to go to the Tashi station to pick up some power converters. Like, she's so damn whiny.
You can smoke pot with your bud later.
Exactly. Blart waves her off, telling her he'll be 5 minutes and heads outside. She whines that she doesn't know how to use the walkie-talkie because apparently she's a moron. So Paul Blart goes around, checks outside, and we get the requisite cat jump scare, because of course we do. He opens a dumpster, finds blood in the dumpster, and then a cat jumps out at him and knocks him over. Like, why was the cat in a closed... Who put the cat in the dumpster?
And were there two cats? Was this the same cat?
You guys, the actor always has to have a cameo. That's Michael Myers.
Ah, yes. That was Vincent.
Yes.
He is just sitting here staring at me. He's just like, why are you talking about me?
He's like, I know you're talking about me. I know what you're doing.
Why saying bad things about Dick Warlock?
He speaks to me. Oh, man. So he finds the storage room is unlocked and goes in. So he goes in, turns on the light, looks around, hears a noise, tries to call it out. Like, you know, hello, is anyone there? No one answers. So he calls into Janet, telling her someone broke into the storage room and she needs to drive down to the sheriff's station right away. Janet beats the walkie-talkie with a stick like a howler monkey and doesn't understand what's happening.
Why doesn't this thing work? I'm hitting it. Isn't that how you make it work?
She's literally smacking it and turning every dial on there. Like, oh,
this is one painful. Point, she yells into the antenna.
Yes, she does. Oh, God. So, Paul Blart.
That was literally the point where I threw my arms up. I was like, she deserves to die.
Yeah. Yeah. She goes out in a interesting way. That, again, we'll get there, but that scene used to freak me out, too. So, Paul Blart hears another noise and investigates further. He steals himself and opens a door that's unlocked, and a mess of boxes fall onto him. He continues deeper into the storage room. Then Michael jumps out and kills him with a hammer to the head. And I was like, wait a second. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Friday the 13th part 2 where a cop gets killed with a hammer to the head?
Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have two 1981 slasher movies where a cop of sorts gets killed with a hammer to the head.
It's hammer time.
It's interesting. So Janet finishes beating the walkie-talkie, ooks a little bit, and walks back to her floor. She's like, I don't got time for this, and she leaves. We cut to Loomis, Gary, and the coroner looking over the burnt body. The coroner points out that even though the body is charred, we can see that there's no fillings in the teeth, meaning that the guy was young, maybe 17 or 18. Loomis tells them that Myers is 21, so clearly he must have fillings because he's 21. But, which, sure. I mean, I'm 41 and I have no fillings, but hey.
I'm like Alvarez. I brush my teeth.
Look at me. I have good teeth and dental hygiene. Oh.
But I'm just saying, like,
I'm Mr. Fancy Pants. I know how to floss.
I don't have any bits of wood in place of teeth.
But I mean, come on. It's a 4-year difference. Is it really going to be that much of a difference? Like, come on.
Listen here, you smug prick. George Washington will always be cooler than you with his wooden teeth, okay?
You know what he did to when he needed a filling? He used wood glue.
When he needed a filling, he used actual British people. He was that badass. What do you brush your teeth and floss before you go to bed every night? Whatever.
Maybe.
Get off my lawn. I'm gonna go clean my dentures.
Oh my god, I went into a coughing fit again. Whew. I did not expect that to get that reaction.
Sorry.
Oh shit. Oh, but yeah, so to me that stuck out as odd. I guess I'm odd man out on this one.
I don't have great teeth, okay?
Oh, but the coroner tells him to get a positive ID. They'll need to check x-rays and dental records. Loomis gets pissed, saying that will take hours. The coroner then tells him there's no other way to be sure. Loomis tells Officer Gary they have to assume Myers is still alive. Gary realizes that he's right and tells the other officers to get everyone back out there and do a sweep of every street, every house, every backyard. Loomis thanks him, and then we cut to the town flipping out, throwing rocks at the old Myers house. That'll learn him! Just throw rocks at his old house.
Oh, I really wanted Loomis to pop back out and be like, hey, fuck off.
Hey, Lottie, stop throwing rocks, you little prick. But I love this because we cut to Officer Gary and Loomis showing up at the front of the house. And Gary orders back up to the house. Loomis waxes on. He's like, it's the tribe. One of the number was butchered. This is a wake. What the fuck? Loomis is completely shit-faced at this point.
He's hit the bottom of bottle 3.
Oh, man. So they load their weapons and go out amongst the crowd and try to tell them to disperse. A cop comes out of the house and tells Gary and Loomis that the place is empty. He then tells them that they've covered the whole east end of town and found nothing. Gary tells him to check it again. The officer protests, telling him there's nothing, and he says, check it again. So, gets pissed, goes off. Gary tells Loomis that Haddonfield was a pretty quiet town before tonight. Then Loomis reminds him that on Halloween night in 1963, Michael Myers murdered his sister in this very house. So, he's like, it wasn't always quiet. Now we get
this. Yes, we know, Loomis, that's all you ever talk about.
Well, he's about to go on, because we
I know, it's just funny.
We get this great dialogue because he's like, it's his anniversary, Mr. Hunt. He came back. He goes, after 15 years, he waited with extraordinary patience. There was a force inside him biding its time. The staff grew accustomed to his immobility and silence. In many ways, he was the ideal patient. He didn't talk. He didn't cry. He didn't even move. He just waited. The staff was unprepared. They didn't know what he was. He goes, did you? And then his tone changes. He goes very nonchalant. He's like, oh, yeah, I knew. I laughed so fucking hard because he's like, he's all waxing right. On. And he's, oh, yeah, I knew. So just then, two kids come running up to Officer Gary and Loomis and tell them that they're worried about their friend Ben Tramer. Bennett Tramer. He isn't home yet, and he left the party at 10. Gary tells him that it's only a little after 11, and then one kid pipes up saying he was really drunk. Loomis asks how old he was. or how old he is, and he says 17. He had a stupid mask on. Gary sends them on their way. Loomis points out the kid was 17 and wearing a mask to call the coroner and tell him to check Ben Tramer's dental records. Another cop comes running up and tells him that there was a break-in at the old elementary school on Reservoir Road. So they're like, to the Loomis Mobile, and they take off.
Oh. To the elementary school!
Da-da-da! Now we cut back to the hospital where Karen gets a call light jump scare. She's just sitting there like stacking little meds on a cart. And then the call light goes off and she shrieks. Like, it's... I don't know. It was a dumb jump scare.
Especially if she works there.
Right. It's like, I mean, I have alarms going off all the time. Like, yeah, sometimes there are certain ones that will make you jump, but like a call light, as a nurse, you're going to hear that constantly. So you don't think it would make you jump, but whatever. So she heads down to the patient's room and goes to check on him. Suddenly a man in the bed grabs her and pulls her on top of him. She screams. We quickly see it's Bud. She yells at him and calls him a jerk. He tells her that they should go down to the therapy room, and she tells him that she can't leave the kids. He gets annoyed, thinking everyone is acting strange because of Michael Myers. I'm like, yeah, it has nothing to do with leaving a nursery full of infants so you can get off. Yeah, okay. Like, he's such a dick. So Bud and Karen start making out, because of course they do, and he convinces her anyways to come and meet her in the meet him in the therapy room. So he's going to get his way one way or another. So
I love that he actually does throw that comment in that I alluded to earlier with Jimmy, where he's just like, I think my finger needs some therapy.
I forgot about that.
That's like therapy. I mean your butthole.
Like, he's point blank, like, I want to stick my finger in you. Because what the fuck else does he mean?
Oh, God.
Bud wants to dial zero on the brown telephone.
Oh, God,
I've never heard that.
Dial zero on the brown telephone. That is awesome.
It's the quickest way if you want to speak to the operator.
One ringy dingy, two ringy dingy.
Oh, the operator will have something to say, I'm sure. So we cut from perverted Bud to Lori sleeping and having a dream where her mom tells her, I'm not your mother. Which, again, is like so random. And then she's standing behind a boy in a large room. He's sitting in a chair and turns and looks at her. This is intercut with paint, or rather blood, dripping and pooling up. But that was totally paint.
Yeah.
This is the one aspect the movie doesn't need.
Yeah.
The franchise as a whole. But anyway.
Oh, the family connection?
Yeah.
See, now, I've always kind of liked the family connection. But, I mean, I'm fine without it. Like, because they got rid of it in the new ones.
Man, I just hate...
I'm still good without it.
I just hate how shoehorned in it is.
It is.
In this movie.
It doesn't fit. It's like they added it after the fact.
Well, yeah. I mean, somebody clearly watched Empire Strikes Back and was like, oh, sister.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So. But she wakes up, looks around all shocked, and then immediately goes back to sleep. I'm like, all right, apparently it wasn't that freaky for her. So we cut to Bud in the hot tub in the therapy room while Karen strips in the room behind him.
Mike, you work at a hospital. Is this a thing? Is there a hot tub in the therapy room?
Not that I'm aware of, but I have not seen the physical therapy room, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think there is one.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Because I cleaned it a couple times when I was in housekeeping.
Okay.
Hot tub, but the therapy room.
Right. That's the thing. Like, I never really get to see much outside of my little office and, you know, the halls I have to traverse to punch in and punch out. So, so she's stripping in the room behind him, and then she comes out and we finally get dem titties, and she climbs into the hot tub with Bud. So they begin, They begin making out, and she goes, "Oh, it's hot in here." And he goes, "Nah, that's just me, baby." I'm like, oh, God.
See,
so bad.
I really do. I love the shot of him watching her undress, like, right before that. Because just from the expression on his face and the way he's positioned, it absolutely looks like he's just laying there farting in the hot tub.
You know he had his wang up against one of the jets.
He's just like, finger therapy.
He was tickling his boys. Oh, man. So we got to Michael Myers in the next room turning up the temperature on the hot tub. Now, why would any hot tub go up to 140 degrees?
I have that same question.
It's an old hospital and they have a boiler.
But why? I mean, why would the dial
for therapy?
Right. Why would the dial go up that high?
Maybe. Why, what if you're frozen in a block of ice?
Okay, huh? But why would the dial have an actual section on it that was listed as scalding?
Right. Like, is it maybe because all of the doctors party down there and there's a lot of DNA left behind, so they kind of scald it?
They got to kill it, boil it out.
Boil the bacteria out of the tub.
So they have all the therapy levels, and it goes into kill jizz mode. The baby boiler.
Oh, my God. If we named our episodes anything... Kill Jizz Mode or the Baby Boiler would definitely be top contenders.
No, you would name it Dial O on the Brown Telephone.
Oh my God. That sounds like a Nancy Drew mystery. Dial O on the front. And there's just, on the cover, it's just her making a shocked face and a shadowy figure standing behind her.
with the telephone in front of her in the foreground.
Oh my God. Pooh, boy, that got me. Oh, man.
I'm over here crying.
Oh, God, I'm wiping my eyes. Damn, that was good. So, anyway, back to the movie. Karen complains about that it's getting too hot in the tub. She asks Bud to go check on it. So he complains it's cold out there, and her whole demeanor changes. He's like, it can get cold in here, too. He's like, all right. And he gets out of the tub. So he goes to check on it. Turns down the heat in the next room while Karen gets out of the tub. Behind her, we see Michael fucking garrote Bud. Like, we don't know what he's got around his throat, but he kills him. So bye-bye, Bud. And then Michael comes up behind Karen, and he puts his hand on her shoulder. Automatically assumes it's Bud, and she just kind of starts petting his hand, and I'm like, you can't tell this is a person in a jumpsuit. Like, she's touching his arm multiple times.
And he's like, gonna make
a telephone call, aren't you?
And he's got a smelly shit,
right?
God, yeah,
his hand's like bloody and gross. Oh, it just, yeah. But then the best part is she begins sucking on his fingers and licking his dirty ass fingers. And like, she then finally turns and looks up, sees it's Michael. She freaks out. He grabs her and begins dunking her face in the water. We cut over to the thermostat and we see the temperature reaching scalding levels. He continues to dunk her head in the water, burning her face and somehow miraculously not burning his hands. He holds her down.
I hate that part too.
Yeah. Oh, that drives me crazy. Because it's like he's sticking like forearm deep into the scalding water. Like, come on.
It's because he's evil and part shark.
I've always kind of imagined that Loomis did like a lobotomy on Michael Myers. Or some sort of like exploratory surgery, which would explain why he's just a walking punching bag every movie. Not that he doesn't feel the pain, or he just doesn't feel the pain because he's had so much of his brain removed.
Mm-hmm. On a realistic note, though, like, side note, again, I know, Mike, you haven't seen Halloween Kills, but you've seen enough Michael Myers films to know how much punishment the guy takes.
He's a tank, I know.
Right. So my question is, I forget the name of the disorder, but there actually is a disorder where you can't feel certain levels of pain.
Yes.
And I've often wondered, like, and why they haven't explored this in any of the movies, because that would make it make sense, considering they always try to bring it back to Michael is really just human. He's not, you know, mystical, the Thorn Cult trilogy, you know, fuck that. You know, he's actually just a person. It would make sense if he had this disorder where he couldn't feel pain, because he doesn't even flinch when he gets shot or stabbed. He just gets knocked over, and then he gets right back up in, like, every movie.
Because so. Evil.
Because he's evil. He's got the blackest eyes.
Doll's eyes.
A shark's eyes.
Can you imagine how funny the movies would be if instead of saying Loomis saying he was evil all the time, he just said he's a moron?
He's too stupid to know any better.
That boy's an idiot. He doesn't know he's been shot six times.
Oh. So he dunks her until she's dead, and, you know, he pulls her out and throws her on the floor. We see her face is all peeled, and now we cut to the cops and Loomis investigating the school break-in. We see blood kind of all over the place, and there's a butcher knife stabbed into a crayon drawing of a family. And Loomis just looks down, looks at the picture, then looks at Gary and just goes, "Sister, okay, like, we haven't found this out yet, so this doesn't make any sense." And he hasn't found it out yet. So why did he say sister? There's nothing on there that says sister.
In a movie.
Right? It doesn't make any fucking sense. And then they find... Okay, there's the question of, is it pronounced Samhain or is it pronounced Samhain? Because they say Samhain in the movie.
Samhain.
Let's ask Glenn Danzig.
Well, we see Samhain written in blood on the wall. And Loomis tells him, it means Lord of the Dead, the end of summer, the festival of Samhain, October 31st. Like, why is he filled with this random knowledge?
And who taught Michael Myers that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if we're going with the Cult of Thorn... But
yeah, whatever. He was possessed by the Cult of Thorn.
So then Marion
reads at a sixth grade level. Somebody had to tell him that.
But he can write Samhain in blood. And then Marion from Halloween 1 just shows up at the elementary school. She comes running in and tells Loomis that they need to speak in private.
And I absolutely love that he's just, "Oh, I didn't recognize you." I have it. I haven't seen you in, you know, 2 hours.
And that is the best part, because it's the same fucking night.
It's just hours later, and he looks up like he hasn't seen her, and he's like, "Yes, I'm Dr. Loomis, who are you?" "Oh, it's you, the woman that I was driving with the rest of the night." I don't know why, but I'm suddenly picturing Loomis as played by, like, Matt Berry. "That boy is evil! I fired 6 shots! 6 shots into his heart!"
I still love
it. "Yes, I'm sorry, I'm Dr. Loomis, who are you?"
I still love that he knows that he shot him right in the heart. It's like, all right.
"Why, yes, I've got to catch that Myers boy, but it's okay. We can go have a quick shag first."
Well, speaking of that, they go out into the hall to be in private. And
Dr. Loomis, American bartender. Sorry.
Oh. She tells him that he's been ordered back to Smith's Grove by the governor. Loomis laughs it off, and she tells him Dr. Rogers doesn't want anyone from Smith's Grove anywhere near Haddonfield, saying that this whole Myers ordeal will jeopardize their entire program. Loomis tells her to tell them that she couldn't find him. He's like, "Tell him you couldn't find me. Just get out of here." She tells him he doesn't have a choice, that there's a marshal waiting for him outside.
And he looks at her and asks, if I gave you $1 million tax-free, would you just go away?
Oh, man. So we cut back to the hospital, and Jimmy checks in on Lori yet again. And this time he finds her catatonic. Now, this is funny, because she's not actually catatonic. So she's just playing dead because she's like, oh, fuck, Jimmy's back again? Like, he won't leave me alone. So he runs to get a nurse. The nurse comes running in and says that she must have had a reaction to one of her meds. So now we cut to Janet running to get Dr. Mixter. And she finds him sitting in his chair, not responding to her with his back to her. She turns his chair around and we see a syringe sticking out of his eye.
But, you know, first she does the very slow approach the whole time going, Dr. Mixter, Dr. Mixter, Dr. Mixter.
Yep.
Dr. Mixter? Dr. Mixter? Dr. Mixter?
It's Timmy's
Josh?
Doctor.
Josh.
Hi, Timmy.
Josh, I'm going to flick the syringe that's on your eye because I can't help myself.
Oh, yeah, make it wiggle.
Bye.
Every time I see that, I just want to like, boing, like a doorstop.
Oh, man. And the close-up on the eye looks terrible.
Oh, like it really does.
It's a really bad effect.
It's like a Cadbury cream egg painted white.
It totally is. It's really bad. So Janet backs away in horror. And now this is the scene that, as a kid, this scared the crap out of me. Because Michael just kind of melts out of the shadows and grabs her. And then he takes a syringe, he pulls back the stopper, and sticks it into her temple and then plunges down on it. So basically he like shoots a shitload of air into her brain. I was like, ugh, that's a horrifying way to go.
Those are my favorite Michael Myers moments, where he's just been in the background the whole time, not making a noise.
Yeah. That's always scary.
I was just quietly in the shadows there, waiting to be acknowledged. I was hoping somebody would say hello to me, but if that's the case, nobody's going to say hello to me, then I'll pop out and say hello in my own way. Just a quick little howdy-do. I wasn't trying to, do anything drastic. I just thought she could use a little nip.
It's the Michael Myers School of Bathroom Etiquette, where he just watches you. Like a cat, go to the bathroom.
Oh, cat shark.
Well, I thought I'd let her do number two first, so, I wouldn't have that on my hands when I killed her.
He didn't want to dial 0 on the brown phone. Oh, although there is a kill later that there's a meme of, I'll have to find and send to you guys. I'll mention it when we get there. But ties into dialing 0 on the brown phone. So Jimmy runs to find Miss Elves, and the nurse who's with Laurie sees a call light go off, and she leaves to go check on it. We get a POV shot of Michael walking through the halls to Laurie's room. He comes in holding a scalpel and just starts stabbing at the blankets repeatedly. Then he pulls back the covers and finds pillows, but no Laurie. Now we cut to Laurie hobbling through the halls. Michael leaves to go search for her. We see him watching her on the security cameras, and I was like, ooh, smart Michael is smart. He's actually using technology. We get a POV shot from Lori, and we see that she's still pretty hazy from the drugs. She hides in a room and passes out. Now we cut back to Loomis being taken by the marshal. Gary promises Loomis that they'll find him. Back at the hospital, we see Lori's nurse looking around for help, but no one is around. And I'm like, this is completely unbelievable, even for a hospital at night. There's literally no one other than the, what, like 6 people we met? That's
yep. No, that's the entire hospital.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I was reading, and I guess the director used this from a personal experience. I guess he was at a hospital once with his wife, and that's how the crew was.
Well, then you know what? He's stupid.
And That makes me.
So I mean, I was gonna say. So I mean, maybe it happened, you know, once while he was at the hospital, but.
Right, but it makes me question.
Normally, that's not how it works, but.
Well, it makes me question if he was at a clinic or a hospital, because you know, a clinic would be understaffed. Right,
but it's called Haddonfield Memorial, so that tells me it's a hospital.
Oh yeah, they totally call it a hospital several times in this film. But it's like his personal experiences. It's like, it seems off. But anyway. Yeah. So Jimmy pops up and scares the crap out of her. And he tells her he can't find anyone. He says, Bud's gone. Miss Elves is gone. No one is around. He tells her to go check the East Wing. And if she can't find anyone, to go to the police. Meanwhile, Michael is just standing in the room doing his best Alfred Hitchcock impression. Just kind of standing behind the screen. We just see his shadow. That cracked me up. But Jimmy goes and finds Mrs. Elves. She's now dead. Her blood having been completely drained out all over the floor and turned into red house paint.
Yes. Very clearly red house paint.
I love it because he walks all the way up to her. No problems. Like, there's blood everywhere. It's covering the entire floor. He walks through the blood to get to her to be like, are you alive? Like, do you still got more blood in there? And then he turns to walk away and has this wonderful pratfall where he just slips and he's like, and knocks himself out. And apparently the actor actually did that.
Yep, on one try.
Yeah, because he actually knocked himself out.
One take.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do a second take of that.
No, hell no. So we see Laurie's nurse leaving to go get the cops. And of course, her car doesn't start because, you know, it's a horror movie. But then we find out there's actually reason this time. She gets out and sees that her car is leaking some kind of fluid and all of her tires are slashed. She looks at the other cars in the lot. All of their tires are slashed as well. So Michael was actually out there sabotaging all the cars, which is pretty smart. So then we see Laurie wake up and stagger out of her hiding spot. Her nurse comes in and sees her, calling out to her. Michael comes up behind her nurse, stabs her in the back with a scalpel, and lifts her up. Laurie sees this. She's in her drugged haze. And I was like, that's kind of a terrifying thought. Like, if you're drugged out, turn around and see the killer is just a few feet behind you. You know I can't really run.
I'm not going to lie. That was one of the few moments in the movie I was like, okay, that's pretty terrifying.
Right.
Like, just the general idea of having to get away from someone pursuing you in that state. Although the moment of him lifting the nurse up with the scalpel, the framing and the way they shot that was just so fucking ridiculous. What did he lift her entire body up with the tip of the scalpel only?
Right.
And well, he did it in the first movie sort of with a knife.
True.
They're
once again trying to show you how strong he is, but that image is the meme I was telling you about where it's just the look on her face with him standing behind her, like that shocked O face. And it's just a surprise finger in the butt.
Yeah.
But he drops the nurse. Laurie runs. Michael follows. Now we get the chase through the hospital. She runs into the hanging guard. Michael is like, you know, chasing her from room to room. She climbs out a window. He almost grabs her. And she runs to the elevator and, like, she's pushing the button trying to make the elevator come down as Michael slowly approaches. And again, this is like that thing in movies where a phone won't work and they keep hitting the receiver being like, hello, hello, hello. That's not going to make the phone work. Repeatedly pushing the call button on the elevator is not going to make it move faster.
But it might.
I always thought that it did.
No. It drives me batshit crazy. She's like, come on, just hammering away on the button. And so she gets in the elevator, you know, and this is another part that's bullshit. Michael reaches in, the elevator closes on his hand and doesn't reopen. If you stick your hand in a closing elevator door, it's going to open up again. Like, come on now.
Well, you know, this was simpler times.
This was elevator rip your arm off times.
Yeah, these were the times when your parents would warn you, like, don't stick your arm in the elevator.
Also, escalators could eat you and kill you.
Yes.
Yeah. And so could alligators if you didn't flush the toilet.
Exactly. So she gets in the elevator, escapes. Then we see her running out into the parking lot, and she hides in one of the cars. Now we cut to Loomis and Marion being driven away by the marshal. Loomis is playfully jabbing at Marion with, "You didn't believe me." I was like, I love how he's just such a dick. And now we get another Loomis rant. And oh my God, this is funny. He mentions the blackboard at the school and goes, he basically gives Marion and the marshal a history lesson. He's like, "In order to appease the gods, the druid priests held fire rituals. Prisoners of war, criminals, the insane, animals were burned alive in baskets. By observing the way they died, the druids believed they could see omens of the future. 2,000 years later, we've come no farther. Samhain isn't an evil spirit. It isn't goblins or ghosts or witches. It's the unconscious mind. We're all afraid of the dark inside ourselves."
Ah, see, that was a teaser. Teaser for Halloween 3.
I love just how fucking insane Loomis is. Like, he is clearly drunk. Oh, man.
Well, by this point in the night, this is he's at the end of bottle 4.
He's just wasted. So Marion tries to tell Loomis about a file on Michael that was sealed that he never saw. He's like, "I know everything about him. I've seen everything."
And what like, file?
Yeah, he goes, or she says the file was sealed by the court after his parents were killed. And I'm like, wait, when were his parents killed? I feel like we missed that part.
Yeah.
And then Loomis tells her, he's like, "Well, what are you talking about? What file?" And she goes, "After what happened tonight, the governor authorized Dr. Rogers to open the sealed file." She tells him that Lori is Michael's sister. She was born 2 years before Michael was committed, and 2 years later, her parents died, and she was adopted by the Strodes. Loomis makes the connection that Michael killed one sister 15 years ago, and now he's here to kill his other sister. He asks where Lori was taken. Marion tells him, and he tells the marshal to take them to the hospital. The marshal refuses, saying he has orders. Loomis just pulls his gun and tells him, "Now you have new orders." And the marshal warns him he's getting himself into a lot of trouble. And he goes, Loomis being the crazy bastard he is, says, "What is it you fellows do? Fire a warning shot?" And he shoots out one of the windows. And then we see this Dukes of Hazzard style, like, spin the car around and drive in the other direction.
Ah, that's the motivation I needed.
Oh, God. So we cut back to the hospital. Lori is still hiding in the car. Jimmy staggers into the car and begins trying to start it, looking dazed. Lori calls out to him. He looks over confused and tells her, "It's all right. We're gonna get out of here." He then passes out, head down on the horn. So Lori,
which makes him the most useless character ever.
Yep. He just basically alerts Michael to where she is.
So is he dead?
Jimmy sucks. No, I don't think so. I think he's just passed out.
Okay.
Because she pulls him back off the horn, and then he just kind of like lolls his head back, and I don't know. Yeah, he's dead.
Wondering if there was like a cut scene with Michael doing some more damage or something. Not that it matters. I don't care.
Well, only because of the direction we've already gone with this, I really expected you to be like, I always expected there to be a cut scene with Michael to like be doing something sexual to him.
Dialing on his brown phone.
Michael Myers stuck his index finger in my poopy hole. And then some girl stuck it in her mouth later on.
He's evil. He's evil. He tried to put his fingers inside me without lubrication, and he had the blackest eyes.
I had pizza without mushrooms. Now it's on his fingers.
I had the brownest hole.
Oh, can you picture Loomis like, he had the brownest eye?
Oh no.
Loomis, what are you talking about? Never mind.
I'm drunk. Go home. I think after this, Jimmy just goes to space. So I think this was soon after.
Jimmy's in space.
He gets called up to play the last Starfighter in space. So she then falls out of the car into the parking lot. and we see Loomis, Marion, and the Marshal arrive. Laurie can't call for help until after they go inside, because it's a horror movie. After they go inside, that's when she can finally scream help, but they can't hear her. Laurie gets up and slowly begins heading for the hospital doors again. Just then, Michael pops up behind her like, "Surprise, bitch!" Then Laurie runs to the doors, which are now locked for reasons. Like, they were open for the group to go in, and now they're locked. I don't know.
It's because Loomis has magic Loomis powers.
Exactly.
No, it's because Michael Myers has dick wizard powers.
Dick wizard! Oh. So she pounds on the door screaming. Loomis comes running over and lets her in. And they close the door just as Michael gets up to the door. Michael walks through the glass like it's nothing. Like, he doesn't even put pressure on it. He just walks into it. The glass shatters and he keeps coming. Loomis shoots him several times and drops him. The Marshal goes running over to him and Loomis yells at him to be careful. Marshal goes, "He's dead." And Loomis goes, "He's still breathing. He's not dead. Look at him." Loomis orders Marion to go use the radio in the Marshal's car to get help. So she runs out to go call on the radio. Loomis turns to Laurie and apologizes for leaving her. The Marshal kneels down by Michael, saying he stopped breathing. Loomis warns him to get away, but Michael jumps up and slits the Marshal's throat.
Oh, the Marshal's face. The face he makes as Michael is slitting his throat. The way he sticks his tongue out and goes cross-eyed.
He just needed the X's painted over his eyes.
I really expected him to just be like,
Michael, when you make that noise, we go, blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Oh, so we see Marion call the situation in while Loomis and Laurie go, they run and lock themselves into surgery. Loomis tries to give Laurie a gun. Michael begins pounding on the door and just breaks in. Like, again, the dude, he's ridiculously strong. He pounds on the door twice, and the thing just starts splintering. It's like, all right. But Loomis then shoots it, or goes to shoot him, and he's out of ammo. Michael just stabs him in the gut, like, bye-bye. Michael comes toward Laurie. She picks up the gun, says his name. He pauses, giving her that, like, confused dog head tilt. Like, how you know my name? And then she fires twice and apparently is fucking Annie Oakley because she nails him in both eyes. Like, that, you know, that never bothered me before watching it critically. And I'm like, wait beginner's a luck. Second. Yeah. It's like you wildly fire twice and you just happen to take out both of his eyes. So, all right.
And the perfect, like, simple blood streams out of both of his eyes.
Yep. Yeah. Although, unfortunately, on modern equipment, that scene is ruined because you see blood coming from above his eyes under the mask, like the blood mask. Yeah. So it's like, oh, man. But Michael, now blinded, swings wildly at the air, trying to slash Laurie. Loomis gets up and starts opening one of the gas tanks in the room. Michael hears it hissing and comes toward him. Laurie follows Loomis's lead and starts opening more tanks, filling the room with gas and confusing the hell out of Michael.
Because this is apparently the end of a video game.
Resident Evil.
Yep. So Loomis pulls out a lighter while mutter, he's a shark.
Well, like, the whole time, like, you can barely understand him. He's like, I had the subtitles on. And it clearly said, like, go on, get out of here. But I heard, like,
well, because Pleasance was wasted by then. but no, he actually says he's an animal. But I heard he's a shark. So
is animal.
He tells Laurie
that poor boy's butthole
blew it all up.
I dialed zero too many times.
Brown Road. I'm taking it down the Hershey Highway.
Oh, no. Oh, man. So he tells her to get out, and she, you know, she takes off running. She runs behind Michael as he's swinging wildly toward Loomis. And Loomis just goes, It's time, Michael. And he lights his lighter, igniting the gases and blowing the shit up. Marion hears the explosion and runs toward the building. We see Laurie thrown down the hallway by the explosion. And then, of course, Michael staggers out of the fire, burning alive because, of, you know, of course he does. Makes it a few steps. Laurie watches him and he falls over and stops moving. So bye-bye, Michael.
I will say I absolutely, you know, one of the things that really consistently bothers me in any modern movie with like heavy CG effects is CG fire. So I really appreciate the shots of the burning mask where you can see that they're actually burning a mask.
Oh, yeah. Well, like we had said on a, on another episode talking about like fire stunts, like how I'm glad people don't have to endanger themselves anymore. But holy hell, like old school fire stunts are so impressive.
And yeah. I've always liked, you know, every slasher movie, you got to finish off the killer most of the time. And it's always like, how can we top ourselves? This is one of my favorites. Just Michael Myers is done. He's yeah. just burnt out, like literally like, oh, fuck it. Like he
just just falls over. Bleh. But like that's the thing. Like Carpenter was clearly killing his creation. It was like, okay, he ain't coming back from this. He was shot in the eyes twice, and then he was burned. He was blown up and burned alive. Like, yeah, he's not coming back. But you know, was it?
Yeah, he even said not long afterwards in an interview that he was like, no, unfortunately, Loomis and the Shape are dead.
Yes. But they were like, no, no, no. Loomis just has a little schmutz on his face in part four. And Michael has a crispy hand.
Michael and Loomis are dead until I need some money for cigarettes.
Exactly. We cut to the next morning. We see cops, the news, and more paramedics showing up, along with a bunch of looky-loos outside the hospital. Cop comes up to Officer Gary. Gary asks, what's the count? He tells him 10 so far. We see Laurie wheeled into an ambulance. The reporter tries to question her, but Marion tells him to back off. She gets into the ambulance and is taken away. We see Laurie kind of staring stone-faced in the back of the ambulance. We cue Mr. Sandman and cut to a burning Michael. Black screen, credits, the end.
Which, you know, as everybody knows, signifies that I'm just having a little nap. I've taken a little rest until they throw me back in the water and I can seek out some new people, have a little munch on, and sneak up behind them, give them a little dial zero, see what they think of it, make them give me the O face, because that's the way to operate as a shark killer thing.
A little peekaboo.
Little penis peekaboo.
Oh man, we already mentioned. Oh, good.
Oh, I was just gonna say that's usually when I make sure to take the kids out is after they're done playing their peekaboo penis, because at least they're gonna have a little fun and then they're gonna die. Gonna have myself a little sandwich and then take a little nap and then kill more kids.
Oh, Lord, a little peekaboo penis. I'll have to remember that. So we already mentioned a lot of the trivia, but one of the things that's kind of interesting is this is the only Halloween to show the morning after the 31st. Every other film ended on the 31st. So.
Which means as she was being wheeled into the ambulance, Lori was doing that morning after Walk of Shame or Wheel of Shame.
Although, you know, I think that the new Halloween trilogy is going to change that, because while both Halloween 2018 and Halloween Kills takes place on Halloween night, you know, if we're continuing, I mean, I don't imagine it's going to be like, well, we still have 3 hours of Halloween night left, you know, it's...
Apparently it's going to jump forward 4 years.
Oh, so it's going to go back to Halloween.
I would assume so.
apparently this was originally planned to take place in a high-rise apartment building, That was in the original script, and then eventually the setting was changed to Haddonfield Hospital. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I can't imagine why it would take place in a high-rise apartment building, especially if they were going to continue the story of Laurie. But whatever.
Because she went to the hospital and she was fine, so she went home to her high-rise apartment, where all of her friends came over, and they were hanging out and playing the Ouija board. And then all of a sudden they get a knock at the door, and it's good old Bruce.
It's Poltergeist 3. And then, of course, for anyone that was wondering, yes, Jamie Lee's hair in this is a wig. So, because by this point she was rocking the short hair, so ugh. they had to get her a wig that matched her hair in the original movie, although it doesn't quite match.
And just because we have discussed it,
mm-hmm.
To some degree, I feel like this needs to be done before the end.
Mm-hmm.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason. No conscience. No understanding, even in the most rudimentary sense of life or death. Of good or evil, right or wrong. I met this 6-year-old child with his blank, pale, emotionless, dumb face and the blackest eyes. Devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply stupidity. Because he's just a stone cold moron and we gotta keep him locked up.
See,
oh man,
I would enjoy the original Halloween so much more if Michael Myers was just a walking idiot.
Bill Myers.
Michael Myers, underachieving brother.
Hey guys, I'm Bill Myers. I got a turkey I'm gonna hit you with.
Trick or treat. I got gravy.
It's Thanksgiving already. Yeah, I know. It's Thanksgiving, Halloween, trick or treat. I got you, pumpkin.
Oh, I love Bill. So, yeah, we should probably start wrapping this up here. One last bit of trivia. I thought this was kind of fun. Is that this is the only slasher film in 1981 to remain uncut. So the MPAA didn't fuck with this one. But Friday the 13th Part 2, My Bloody Valentine, and others were heavily cut. So I don't know what John Carpenter did to appease the MPAA, but he did something.
He dialed 0.
He knew their telephone number.
All right. So before we get out of here, we should mention our social media as always. So if you guys aren't following us, we are the Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. And Maurice handles our Twitter. And what is that, good sir?
At Boogeyman's the.
Thank you very much. By the time you hear this, our 2 Halloween giveaways will already been won. But we will have a November giveaway going up later this week. So definitely check out the social media if you're interested in that. We do have a Patreon.
It's full of cheese.
Yes. Actually, there may be cheese of some kind in the Thanksgiving one. So we'll keep you guessing. But we do have a Patreon if you guys are interested. It's $3 a month for all of our unedited audio content. As well as a exclusive episode every month. We also have higher tiers that you'll get stuff in the mail, like art prints and other random goodies. So, if you guys are interested in that, check it out. I'm going to toss it over to Mike and Josh here. If you guys have any plugs that you would like to give.
If you would like to hear more shenanigans like this, please listen to the Count Creepyhead podcast. We are the Boogeyman Closet's underperforming little brother. Look for us on Facebook. That's Creepyhead with a K. And if you were wondering, rotary phones, if you don't know what they are, It's dialing O on the brown telephone. So we didn't have telephones back in the day. We just stuck fingers in butts. And that joke is done.
Is it though? Is it though?
We'll see.
I have a feeling that will come back at some point, much like Timmy.
And if you want to purchase a sentient brown phone minifigure, why don't you head over to Pikmin's Vinyls? That's PikmansVinyls on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, even though I really barely use it. Just go look at the weird little things that I make with Mike, and we wave around and be like, look at this thing. Go do it. I'm doing a $5, I don't even know, that's going to be done. Cut this. I'm not doing a $5 raffle by the time this goes up. You will be able to go purchase the RJ McCready mini bust in the Pikmin's Vinyl web store, the links to which are in all of my social medias.
You said web store.
I did.
Hey, there's happy Halloween, everybody. In it.
Indeed. Happy Halloween, folks. So for anyone interested, our next episode, we have not picked the episode yet, but check our social media. It's going to be our zombie movies, though. We're starting our month of zombie movies in November. So soon after this will be episode 117. So
Passion of the Christ.
I mean, it fits.
It's a zombie movie.
But all right, guys, with that, we're going to wrap things up. So as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
Happy Halloween.
Bye, guys.
I bought a brick of cheese last week, and I thought it was really fantastic. So I just thought I'd share that with you and tell you all to have a happy Halloween.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.